Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is the iOS Show, episode 352, recorded on March 17th, 2018. Enjoy! All right, it's time for the iOS Show, where we cover all things iOS and beyond. This episode is sponsored by Jamf Now, the device management solution for your Apple devices at work. Check them out at jamf.com/TIOSS. I am Michael Johnston, and with me is Adam Christensen from the MacCast. Hey, Adam, how are you doing?
I am doing well. How are you doing, Michael?
I'm doing well. Also.
Cool. I'm not fighting off any chickens.
No chicken fighting, correct, because that's illegal. Jeff Gamet is also here from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. No chicken fights for me, and no issues with rattlesnakes either.
Good. I'm glad. So let's do the thing we're here to do, right? So Apple is going to be hosting what seems to be a minor event, I would guess. Right, so they're going to be hosting an event.
They're doing it at a high school.
Yeah, so they're doing an event March 27th in Chicago. The invitation says creative new ideas for teachers and students.
Nice.
It says let's take a field trip, and so we're not entirely sure what's going to be there. What's happening there. But we're guessing it's going to be something education focused. Some of the possible things it may be, we've been talking about rumors of a cheaper 9.7-inch iPad, something to the tune of like $260.
Do you really think they're going to use an education event at a high school to introduce new hardware?
Well, it's not technically new hardware, right? We're talking about a reduced price point.
Right. Yeah, something that's more education-focused. I mean,
the rumors are
focused.
That there may be an update to the hardware, but it could just be, I think Ming-Chi Kuo had said, it could just be a price drop. So if it's just a price drop on the 9.7, this kind of an event, I think, would make sense because that's the price point that, you know, schools, that's that the 9.7 is the one model of the iPad that schools are interested in because of the price point.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, again, you could say, well, why would they take the time to have an event at a high school or anywhere for that matter, for a price drop on an iPad? They typically don't do that.
This is about a new education initiative thing.
Yes.
Right. So, okay. So I guess I should clarify. I could see during the announcement that they quietly lower the price. And then mention it as they're making the announcement. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're not going to like have a big slide and make a big to-do about it.
Right. Yeah.
That would be how that would roll out.
It's going to be, part of a larger thing, a larger education-based thing.
We're going to be talking about a whole strategy.
Such as ClassKit for education apps, which is something that I don't think we really have many details on. It's something that I think 9to5 Mac talked about a little while ago, just kind of based on strings and whatnot in iOS.
Is that not related to the stuff they acquired? Didn't they acquire a big education? That's just an app that they've had for a while, right? ClassKit? Or am I confusing that with the other thing?
You might be confusing it with something else. I think this is going to be an overall education push. And I think that it will also serve as an opportunity to trot out some, you know, quote unquote new hardware or hardware that is maybe lower priced, maybe better suited for education. Another possible thing that may be occurring is...
I was thinking of the Classroom app, by the way.
The Classroom app. How does I remember that vaguely. What is that?
So the Classroom app is like a management tool for teachers and iPads. And so it's like they can...
It's like for multi-user iPads, basically.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Right.
And so they can see all the students. They can see what apps the students have open, what they're working on. I think they might even be able to remotely view their screens. They can lock the iPads out. So if they're lecturing... they can like hit a button and it locks all the kids' iPads so they can't use them, share screens and stuff like that. So
yeah,
that must be different than the class kit thing that you're talking about.
I think so, yes. I also think that there's a possibility for a cheaper MacBook Air. $799 is something that we've been hearing.
That's another rumor we've been hearing. And again, another thing that is the MacBook Air is certainly a school-based
Mac. Yeah. And then lastly, and I think this is the most interesting, is a new Apple Pencil.
Yeah, that's not going to happen with the... that will happen when we get an iPad Pro update, I would imagine.
Yeah, you think so?
Yeah. And I don't expect a lot from a new Apple Pencil. Wireless charging?
I don't think wireless charging is going to happen with the Apple Pencil.
That's what I would like to see happen. If they change it, though, so it doesn't have to stick out the side of my iPad like some dumbass antenna.
I think integrating the W1 chip technology somehow so that you don't have to, it's just like the auto pairing and you don't have to do the weird dock it to the iPhone pairing or to the iPad pairing.
Great.
Possibly. But here's the thing though. I go to school with a bunch of people who also use Microsoft Surface, mm-hmm. and boy, do those people have issues with their stylus. It's just every once in a while, there's some kind of, it's not pairing for some reason. And they're just going into settings and closing settings and opening settings,
right,
and pulling out batteries and putting batteries back in. And whenever my stylus doesn't connect because I perhaps rebooted or something like that, I just go, oh, okay. And then just plug it in for two seconds. And then it's fine.
Yeah. But think about my AirPods, once they're paired, they stay paired and I never have any issues. So
Also jump between devices for you.
I've had more issues with my AirPods than I've had with the Apple Pencil.
Interesting.
I mean, to be fair, very few issues, but I would say I think the way they have it now is good. Now, here's my other question.
Before we get off the Pencil, what other updates would you do for the Pencil? I mean, it seems to make the most sense.
Well, that's the interesting.
You don't
question.
Have to worry about losing the cap, right? Oh, go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. So yes, wireless charging seems great. I just don't know that it is possible with physics to do that.
Oh, I hadn't thought about the physics part.
I don't think it's actually possible to put a coil in that thing to actually
just went up and down the entire length back and forth.
Or if the coil ran around the shaft.
I don't think...
Would that work?
I don't...
can't imagine why not.
I don't think it would. I think technically you could do that. But then in order to actually charge it, it would have to be so precisely oriented for it to work.
So they'd have to give you a special charging tray to set the pencil in.
You would need a special charging
tray. That's what I would imagine it would be. Have you seen the little trays they have at the Apple stores?
I want one of those trays for my desk.
Yeah. Well, I think it would be a special charging tray, and I think you would need to... You also would need to perfectly orient it, you know? So in the same way that you need to, how it rolls so that it shows Apple Pencil... You know, I'm talking about how it's weighted,
right,
so it mm-hmm. shows that.
But I mean,
so it would need to be perfectly aligned because if it was off axis,
even if the coils went all the way around the entire shaft, the entire length.
Yes.
Why? I don't understand why that would be.
Because the coils need to be if it was just off axis even a little bit, because you're still talking about a plane of coil, right? Unless you're saying that the coils go all the way around uniformly perimeter.
Yes.
Like a spiral.
I think in that case you may actually end up with destructive interference where it just wouldn't charge. I'm also like a quarter talking out of my ass right now because it's been a while since I've done stuff with E&M. I'm pretty sure I'm going to go out there. I'm going to say wireless charging is not coming to Apple Pencil unless there are other styluses out there that do that. And in which case I'll be extremely intrigued and want to research how that works, but I don't think that it's going to happen.
All right. Well then here's something else I would like to see. You know how you can remove the tip and replace it if it wears out?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Alternate tip styles.
Yeah. So I would love it if they had a higher friction tip, for example.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be
a broad stroke tip. Yeah.
I would love the whole orientation thing where you flip it around and it can be used as a secondary, like eraser or some other.
That was also something I was thinking of. Yeah. But then they would have to, then they couldn't do the way that it charges. And don't forget, that's one of the great things about the Apple Pencil is that you can always charge it if you have your iPad. And if you don't have your iPad, there's no sense in charging it because you can't do anything.
So that's a more valid point, actually, with the whole wireless charging thing.
Right.
Yeah.
But I do. Yeah. So as far as, you know, what's going to be new at the Apple Pencil, it's already a great tool. The only thing I dislike about it is really the low friction of the thing.
Really?
Yeah. If it had a bit better friction coefficient, like I was writing on paper, then I'd be much happier with it.
That, I mean, I don't know that that's something that can be solved by the pencil itself. That almost, to me, seems to be...
a covering?
Needs to be solved by the surface of the iPad screen, right?
Possibly, yeah. But yeah, so those are the...
sort of coating or some sort of...
You can get that on Amazon, you know. You can actually find... I've recently found a it's like a $40 thing that you throw on there, and I guess it works quite well, although it makes your...
Yeah, there's glass screen covers that'll have a little bit of a, like, just a little bit of a tooth to them, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've used a lot of the problem, and I liked them.
You did like them?
Yeah. The problem was with every stylus that I had, over time it would wear out the texture part, and so then you have these areas on your iPad that are just smooth.
Ugh.
And then they'd probably like skip and stuff like that. The other problem with a lot of them too is that material can diffuse the retina pixels enough where you get sometimes with some of them that weird refraction of red, blue, and green light at certain angles.
That is one of the things that they like openly admit about the product is that it does screw up the screen a bit. But I'm intrigued.
Open about that.
If they sent me one, I would definitely try it. Let's put it that way. Anyway, let's see what we have here. We've got another report, according to DigiTimes, that the AirPower inductive charging mat may be released by the end of March. They claim that the AirPower mat will have a maximum charging of 29 watts, which is compared to a 7.5 watt, which is the 7.5, is that the max inductive charging?
Yes.
That we
iPhones can handle.
Okay. Yes. So that's pretty interesting. 7.5. So 29 divided by 3 is 9.6.
Yep. So 10 watts per pad.
That's a crap ton of power right there. So you can, if you could physically fit 3 iPhones on there, you could charge 3 iPhones very quickly. Now, just based on this photo, it doesn't look like it's designed for that to work.
I think it's really designed for
a phone, AirPods, a watch, and
an iPhone,
AirPod,
and an Apple Watch.
Yes.
I mean, I think that's the point.
Yeah, it's definitely the point. So, I mean, ultimately, we're still thinking, what, $100 for this thing or $200?
No, people are saying $200, and I'm like, no way.
That's not happening. Nobody's going to buy that.
I cannot imagine Apple releasing that for $200.
If they do,
even Apple.
Apple is fully intoxicated off the smell of their own farts at that point.
Yeah. I mean, I think the rumors were like $179 range.
That's still just bad. It needs to be $100, and even $100 is a lot.
And then people argue that the higher end 10 watt chargers are what, you know, $40-$50 a piece plus.
Oh, are they?
So, yeah, if you get how much is the Belkin one or the Mophie one that they sell in the store? Can't remember the prices on those.
Not
but they're,
sure.
They're upwards of $50-$60, I think.
Well, for what it's worth, the 29 watt USB-C power adapter, which I think is the lowest USB power adapter you can buy from Apple, is $50.
Right.
So you say $50 for the brick. Another, they're probably going to give you a 2 meter cable. Even if they give you a 1 meter cable, that's $25. So you're at 75 at that point. Then you have to have your fancy mat with all the, you know, caper.
So the Belkin charger at Apple sells at the Apple retail store is $60. And so the thought process is, well, three of those would be 180. So that's where Apple's pricing things.
No.
Since you get three in one.
And also,
I don't think people are going to see it that way.
And Apple tax. No, people are not going to see it like that.
Of course.
Especially when I can get an Anker one for $17.
Is that going to charge the same amount?
But I can buy three. I can buy three Anker ones.
Oh, okay.
Right? Yeah, but
it doesn't matter what Apple charges for this thing. People are going to flip at the price. I mean, if they sold it for $50, people would be like, I wouldn't pay more than $29.
Well, I think at $50 it would be a steal.
Oh, yeah.
I think $100 is about $100, maybe $129 seems like the right price point to me. Pushing it above $150 is just insanity.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the Apple Watch magnetic charging dock is $80.
I know.
Keep that in mind. And does that come with anything?
What is how much does Apple charge for their Apple Watch little stand?
That's what I'm talking about.
How much is it?
It's $80.
Yeah. So
it comes.
Yeah.
The dock. It comes with the dock and a Lightning to USB cable, no brick, for $80.
Right. Yep.
Which is
so
banana
cakes. I kind of buy that the Air Power Mat's going to be $179, $199.
I'm really getting tired of this Apple tax thing, and I know it's not going to stop. But
here's the thing, Michael, you don't have to buy it. So, I mean, that's kind of Apple's point, is they know there's going to be a ton of people who will pay that. And for the rest of us, we'll just get our Anker chargers and we'll be happy. So everybody wins.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and it's because
kind of
you can't.
People freak out about the Apple tax, but I mean,
you don't have to buy it. And right. And what you're paying for is the epic convenience of it. Mm-hmm. It is epically convenient. It is very nice. You know, this is something that, you know, depending on your income bracket, you look at that thing and you say, I will pay $200 for that convenience and simplicity in my life. Sure,
Or you can get a USB hub.
Or you can get a USB
bunch
hub.
Of cheap Belkin ones and route out a piece of wood and make your own.
Well, actually, this may be a new pick, but I got a, I finally ordered a thing on Amazon. It's like you get 10 of these cable route thingies. You just like, they have adhesive on one side and you just stick them to the side of your desk or whatever, and then it keeps the cables from falling off your desk. Mm-hmm. Because I have an Anker 5 port USB charge thingy,
right,
which is awesome. But then if I had that, the charge mat, my life would be awesome. Although I don't have nobody has the AirPod
case. Yeah, which is also going to be $70 just for the case.
Good God. Well, at that point, they're going to have the new AirPods with the Ola Siri and stuff.
So that's the other irony about the Air Power Mat, is like, if you're going to have to pay $179 or $199 for the mat, and then another $70 for the new AirPod case.
Oh, ouch. Yep, I hadn't thought about that. Ouch.
So you're really looking at close to $300.
That's fine.
The door.
Drop in the bucket, right? Yep.
Makes the HomePod look like a bargain.
any updates on the HomePod, guys? Any feels on the HomePod that are new?
I still love mine, man. It's freaking awesome.
I've enjoyed
it every day. You know what I discovered the other day was tell me about this artist or tell me about this song, and she'll go into like full details from Wikipedia about whatever you're listening to, which is kind of awesome.
Nice.
Yes. Yeah, I find that I'm actually using Siri more than I used to, because I don't have to grab a device to make it happen. I just talk.
Well, I mean, you have an Apple Watch, though.
Yeah, but you have to raise your wrist and
And
talk.
And then you got to read.
Ugh.
Ugh. Who wants to read?
But see, a lot of times, Michael, when I want the S lady to do something, I'm in the kitchen, I'm like stirring something or mixing something, and so my hand's already in use, and I don't want to stop what I'm doing, so I just talk.
Right.
And I know some people are like, seriously, this is your first world problem. But
we have a lot of this show should just be called First World Problems and people who complain about them.
And people who complain about them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Our listener base would probably triple overnight.
Mm-hmm. They'd be like, ooh, I identify with that. Yeah. Okay. So let's move on. iPhone 10, this year's lineup, according to Korea's ET News, they believe that it's going to feature a smaller notch this year. And the 2019 models, Apple is trying super hard to get rid of the notch entirely.
I'm not buying that for a minute.
You're probably buying the smaller notch.
No, I'm not even buying that.
No, why?
If Apple keeps the notch the same, they can put bigger cameras on the front and more sensors.
Okay. I'm with
you. So if they make it smaller and then decide, hey, we need bigger cameras, and they have to make it bigger again, people aren't going to go for that.
I think the community's way overestimating notch rage. I think it's much milder than most people think.
I think it is pretty damn mild, especially considering the fact that we're seeing all the new Android phones with notches.
Right.
They're just like, oh, okay, we can do that now.
Apple gave us the go-ahead.
Just kind of
made our lives a lot simpler.
Apple gave them permission to go ahead and do it.
We've been wanting to put this thing on here, but Apple hasn't done it yet.
They've been working on technologies for what would ostensibly allow them to remove the notch for like years, right? They have patents related to it. I think once they can integrate everything into the display and not have holes through the display, that's when they'll transition. But I don't see that even happening in 2019. But I mean, didn't we see, they had a patent for like a camera sensor where the receptacles were in between the pixels of a display. And I think that patent was something that they filed for like 5 years ago.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they're working on those kinds of technologies where, you know, the LCD display will just have all of the sensors sort of integrated into it in some way. And until that happens, I think they stick with what they're doing.
What is the quality of the current? Is it EyeSight or FaceTime camera? What do they call that thing? The front camera.
The front facing is the FaceTime.
FaceTime. So what is the quality on that thing? Is it 1080?
Oh, yeah. Let's see.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty sure. It might be 7. You're right. It might be only 720.
No, I think the front-facing camera on the iPhone 10 is 1080.
It surprisingly does not show here. They talk all about the true depth camera. Or wait, sorry. That is what I'm talking about. It's called the true depth.
Are they
depth.
Calling it the true depth camera now on the 10?
Yeah.
That's for the front-facing. Yeah, so it's 1080p, 7-megapixel camera, which is pretty good. I would like it if they fix that on the MacBook Pros, which are still 720p, but that's a different show.
But still a first world problem.
Yes. Yep. Tell me more about my first world. I have to have a dongle. You don't think we're going to get rid of the notch? I would love to get rid of the notch. It would be very nice if we just had this beautiful screen. And I guess Apple wants to get rid of it also, but you do have to have the cutout for the speaker, which you can get around that. I don't know. Maybe I guess we'll just have to wait and see.
Holes maybe. Yeah.
We'll just have to wait and see.
I don't think they're there yet. And I think they're a ways off. And again, I'm with Jeff. Like, the notch allows them to potentially put more sensors, bigger sensors. And again, I just don't think it's that big an issue. I think like people wanted to make a big issue about it, but it didn't take off. So
why aren't people angry with me about this? Okay. So according to Rosenblatt Securities analyst, Jun Zhang, it looks like he believes that we're going to be seeing an iPad Pro with Face ID likely debuting at WWDC 2018 with, I mentioned the Face
with
ID.
With a notch.
Well, we're not sure. It may or may not have a notch. We're definitely expecting slimmer bezels, no home button, which,
notch.
Boy, I don't know.
Which would fit with Face ID.
Actually, having a notch on an iPad is like the least offensive thing you could possibly tell me. Right? Because it you remember when the iPad first came out and it was effectively a big iPhone and it had the carrier name and the signal strength up there like an iPhone, except it just said iPad and it had the Wi-Fi signal.
Yeah.
And it's kind of weird.
Remember that.
It's kind of weird. And so with a notch up there, the notch doesn't take anything away from the iPad experience.
Yeah. Well, and I guess that's the counter argument to why there might not be a notch is because it's such a larger display. They could just make the bezel slightly taller and it's not going to detract from the display too much.
Really? So, yeah.
That's the counter argument to saying, well, you could just fit the sensors in the bezel and again, it wouldn't be a huge problem.
I don't think, well, yeah, I think Apple's going to try to not have a notch on this thing.
It would lend itself to be better symmetry, you know, and especially in a larger screen. And they've always kind of taken a little bit of a different approach with the iPad display.
Right.
Anyway,
I also want to see how we get to the home screen without a home button on the iPad.
It'll be the swipe up.
Wouldn't be the same swipe up from the.
The swipe up takes you to the app switcher right now.
Right.
It won't on a new iPad.
Okay.
It'll be like the iPhone 10.
So it'll be
swipe up from the bottom and
just your pad.
Yeah, it'll be the same gestures we have on the iPhone 10.
And this, you know, this may be related. We get upset about these sorts of things, like they're adding a lot of gestures and it's hard to use, blah blah blah. I had a similar experience with my new MacBook Pro as I did with the iPhone 7 when I got it. And I think I mentioned that when I first got the iPhone 7, I hated it, absolutely hated it for about a week. And then I got used to it, the weird, like, no-click home button and just other weird quirks about it.
Oh, my wife still, since I upgraded to my iPhone 10, I still hear about the not-clicking button.
Really?
Yeah, she got my iPhone 7.
I mean, I have a friend who, like, she had a very similar experience. She got the iPhone 7 because she, you know, dropped her phone in the toilet or something. And she was enraged for a week about the iPhone 7. And then after that, she was just like, yeah, I love this thing. It's great. I have very similar feelings about the MacBook Pro. I think, you know, in a lot of ways, yes, Apple definitely has issues, but a lot of the changes they make are measured, even though they may be extreme. So I very much enjoy my new MacBook Pro now. I still think it's kind of lame that they got rid of the SD card slot. Even I'm kind of over the MagSafe thing. I think they should have kept the SD card slot because it's kind of a pro computer. But I think these big changes, I think these big changes, you know, such as having, you know, all this gesture stuff, I think ultimately it does improve the experience, even though there is a bit of a retraining curve. I don't know that it's a learning curve so much as it is just like a retraining.
Can I admit how bad I am at the retraining curve? Because I can tell you right now, and it may be because I need an iPad that also works like my iPhone 10, but I still only get to control center on the first try probably 50% of the time because I forget how to do it. Like, just instinctively, I just don't think that way, and I haven't converted yet. But it's probably because I use my iPad about 50% of the time and my iPhone about 50% of the time.
Oh, so because you get mixed up. You're talking about pulling down from the top versus from the bottom?
Correct. Yeah, so I'll try to swipe up from the bottom on my iPhone 10, still thinking I'm going to access Control Center, and then I got to go, oh, crap. And then I know what to do, but it's just the muscle memory still hasn't set in, and I've had the iPhone 10, you know, for what, half a year now.
How do you feel about the Face ID on there at this point?
Bleh.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Face ID is weird.
It needs to be better.
I found that if I'm in bright sunlight, that it just doesn't work.
Wow.
At all.
Here's my take on Face ID. Face ID right now feels like Touch ID first gen did.
Yeah.
It's really good. It works well most of the time, but there's little minor scenarios where it's just like, wow, Touch ID, the last generation of Touch ID was so much better. And number one is the attention thing. You know, I don't like having to pick up my phone off the desk, or the other one that really annoys me, and I talked about this on my show, the few times, because I don't really use Siri in the car, but occasionally, in the one example I have, is oftentimes I'll want to launch the podcast app when I'm driving, just so I can see like the album art and stuff like that if I glance over, not so that I can stare at it, but you know, when Siri comes up and says, you need to unlock your iPhone for that. Well, my iPhone doesn't sit directly in front of my face in my car.
Right.
And in the past, I could, without taking my eyes off the road or doing anything, just reach over and put my finger on the home button. Problem solved. You can't do those sorts of interactions right now. And I don't know that there's a solution for that. But yeah, it's just, it doesn't work every single time on first try for me. And the last version of Touch ID did, but remember, the first version of Touch ID didn't work like that. And then there's just a few other scenarios. So Touch ID is really, really, or Face ID rather, is really, really good.
Except
I don't think it's, I don't think it's on par with the most current version of Touch ID in terms of convenience for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, we have a lot more to talk about, betas, some reports about series development and whatnot. But first, we have to talk about our wonderful sponsor, which is Jamf. Jamf now helps you set up, manage, and protect your Apple devices on demand. It's pretty easy to keep track of your own Mac, iPad, or iPhone, but what about the other Apple devices in your organization? As a business grows, so does its collection of devices, making it increasingly harder to manage everyone's iPad, iPhone, and Mac. This is especially true if employees are in different locations. But with Jamf now, you can check real-time inventory, configure Wi-Fi and email settings, deploy applications, protect sensitive company data, and even lock or wipe a device from anywhere. Jamf now manages and protects your devices so you can focus on your business instead. No IT experience needed. And iOS listeners can start securing their business today, setting up their first three devices for free forever, and you add more for just $2 a month per device. Create your free account today at jamf.com/TIOSS. That's JAMF.com/TIOSS. And we thank them so much for their support of the iOS show. Okay, so with that, we got a bunch of betas that came out. Not a lot to talk about with the betas. So I think last week we got, or maybe a little bit before that, they seeded the fourth beta of iOS 11.3 to developers and public testers. Really, the only thing that changed there was they renamed, again, Books back to iBooks.
What up with that, Holmes?
I think they're confused. They're having an identity crisis. They're not sure.
Did they do
that
just because they were putting it out to the public and they didn't want to tip off to the public that
they already tipped it off? I think at this point they're just like, nah, never mind. We like it the other way. They tried it.
No. Oh man, I hope not.
They were trying to see how it looked, and they were like, nah, we don't like how it looks.
Wait, why?
I don't get what's going on there.
It needs to be changed to Books.
It should be changed to Books. I completely agree. Books, music, movies, blah blah blah. That's the
TV.
Way it should be. Yes, yes.
Hey, we don't have movies anymore, right?
I think we have videos. Oh wait, nope. No, that's been co-opted, hasn't it?
Yeah, everything's in TV now,
which is kind of weird.
Yeah, it is weird. It's another one of those that hasn't set in my muscle memory. I often forget.
You get you find your movies in the TV.
Yeah, my movies are in the TV. I think the thought process is there. You watch them on TV.
Yeah, so. Yeah, it's not bad.
But, I mean, the point is like, it's time to dump the I. I is for internet.
Are we on the internet yet?
Internet books. Internet books.
Internet books. I do like internet books, though.
No, I know. But I mean, it makes sense for them to go to books in movie or in TV and music. And I wish they would do that on the Mac, too. And like photos. They should rename iPhoto to Photo, or they did photos.
They did that.
Photos on
they already did.
They did that a couple years ago.
Planking. Yes. Sorry. Forgot for a second.
iTunes. iTunes, they could call that music. Although it's still, yeah, it still is this like monolithic thing with a bunch music. Of other stuff in it. Messages, yeah. Mail. Or do you think they're ever going to change Safari?
We got rid of iChat. We got rid of, you know, like all the iThings are going away. So why would they have this one weird holdout?
Do you think they're going to change Safari to, because Safari is a weird, weird holdout. And you're going to call it internet?
Browse.
Oh, hey, let me open browse real quick and look that up.
Surf.
Oh yeah. Let's make it surf.
Oh yeah.
E.
I don't know what, yeah. What would you do?
I don't know.
I think they're kind of stuck with Safari for right
world.
Now.
Everything.
Go.
Yeah. Go. I guess they could call it web.
We need to come. No, we need to come with a good name for Safari, an adjective or a verb, just a verb. We could call it Reddit.
Okay,
that's what I mean. That's what it is to me. I think I may just rename Safari tonight to Reddit on my computer. So, anyway, a bunch of other betas. So they put out a fourth beta of tvOS and watchOS.
It's funny how they all kind of come out together.
Yep.
So weird.
They always do that. let's see. They did the fifth beta of all three of those things with nothing notable. And then 4 days after the fifth beta, they released the sixth beta of iOS 11.3 to developers and the public testers.
Close to
suggesting a release soon. And so they said that we're going to see 11.3 in the spring, which officially starts March 20th, which, I mean, I feel like this is going to be the first time ever. If that does actually happen on the 20th, that'll be the first time that Apple did it that way, because we're usually like the last day of spring is this day. And so that's the last day Apple can do it.
It feels a little bit early, but
that's
who knows?
Tuesday.
I guess they could roll it out. If they do something announcement wise,
I think they're going to push it out on the 27th at the Chicago event happens.
Again, just quietly, not even mention it, but it's just like, oh, here's the update.
I'm going to put my money on the 27th.
If it's that early, that just kind of feels early. Right. But I mean, with how many beta updates we've been getting and how frequent they are, everything points to that's usually the last few weeks before they do a release. Mm-hmm. So this isn't the first public beta, is it, of all these?
No. The public betas have been going out along with them.
Okay, cool.
Yeah,
so we're close. Something's gonna happen. So
I think so. Yeah. Too.
I'm guessing beginning of April. I'm gonna push it out a little farther than you guys.
Okay.
I'm not putting any money on the 20th or the 27th. I wouldn't take those bets.
More for me. I think that's how betting works.
For you.
let's see. So we got two stories in the past week or so regarding Siri and it being not as good as it should be. So firstly, from one of the Siri co-founders, what is that guy's name? Norman Winarski. In a story for Quartz, he believes that this is the interesting pull quote: Apple is looking for a level of perfection they can't get with Siri, which sounds a lot like Apple. That's a very thing that you could say about Apple in general. So according to him, the initial version of Siri, the intent was to get it very good at a few key areas and then gradually expand from those areas.
Really just two.
Like restaurants and entertainment, right?
Yeah, it was entertainment and travel.
Right. Yeah, so you'd show up at your destination, or you'd show up at the airport where you're supposed to get a connecting flight, but when you get there, the flight was canceled and Siri has already preemptively looked for an alternative flight, or if there are no more flights, it had already looked for a hotel and booked it for you, or prepared it to be booked, sort of thing.
And they were going to just perfect those two things and then move on to start expanding the functionality. And
correct.
When Apple took it over, they basically went, nope, it's got to do all of these things. And so his theory is that like, they just have made it too broad
Yeah, I mean that tracks. We also got a story. Where did this come from? From the information from several unnamed formal Apple employees reflecting on Siri and what they believe was a squandered lead over things like Alexa and Google's Assistant.
It sure feels like Siri's behind in some ways.
Certainly. Well, you know,
Can somebody justify that to me? Because I haven't found anybody who can give me real world examples
of how
that are pretty Alexa, concrete about how Siri sucks more than any one of the other.
Oh, here's the thing. It doesn't.
Assistants.
It doesn't really.
No, every test that I do, and I put a video of one up online. When I put the Google Home, the Amazon Echo, and the HomePod all side by side, and I give them all the exact same commands, they all fail equally at stuff. Not the same stuff, but they all fail equally. I think what it is that a lot of people are just in this mindset where they got used to their Echo or their Google Home, and they just feel like Siri doesn't compete.
The one area I will give definitely Amazon. I don't know how the Google Home is at this. I would assume it's similar. Is the one legacy in my mind where Siri is still suffering is Siri has always had a screen fallback. So when Siri was always implemented until we had the HomePod, right? Siri's always been implemented with a screen attached to her, meaning that in scenarios where more information was available, the fallback was, okay, we'll just put it on the screen. And so I think a lot of people respond to the fact that Alexa and some of these other devices, they verbally read everything to you.
Right.
And that is a nicer experience for a voice assistant. I will give people that. You know, Siri will fall back and show, or can even show information, right? Even if it's something simple like a math calculation or something, she'll verbally read it, but it's also displayed on the screen. So, and now that I have the HomePod, though, people have to understand a lot of that is changing. Like the HomePod is all audio stuff. And I, like I was saying at the top of the show, when I start doing queries about music information and artists and even entertainment stuff, like you can get, movie information and all kinds of other just general information. I would say in that scenario, like you're saying, Jeff, pretty much Siri seems to be on par with the other voice assistants. And even in terms of the tasks that she can perform that most people use, you know, there's obscure stuff that comes in with like skills and apps and stuff like that. But those are so edge case for what most people are using their voice assistants for. So like every task that I ask somebody about, well, what do you do on your Google Home or your Google or your Alexa? And they'll list off these tasks. It's like, well, I like to get the weather or the news or set a timer or set a reminder or play music. And it's like, well, the HomePod does all of those with Siri just really, really well, or get, you know, definitions or spellings or, you know, all of these tasks. So I think Siri takes a bashing, but I just, for the tasks that people seem to do with their assistants, she can do all of them as near as I can tell. I'm willing to accept those exceptions if someone can really give me a good concrete one.
I'm going to take it the other way and let people know about something Siri with HomeKit has been able to do and is fairly recent for the Alexa platform and just came to Google Assistant, and that's creating scenes. You know, so one command to make multiple devices do something simultaneously. That's something we've had with Siri and HomeKit like forever.
Right.
And it's fairly recent on the Alexa platform. I got an email a day or two ago from Google saying, hey, look what you can do with Google Assistant now. And I did a double take because I was thinking, wait, seriously? You couldn't do that before? Yeah. So, yeah, I think that a lot of this feeling like Siri is lagging behind is just that. It's just a feeling.
Yeah, I think what it's coming down to is just preferences, you know, and I know with certain accents and stuff like that, certain platforms are better than others. And we've seen lots of examples of that. So I'll give people that as well, because I don't know. I am an American speaking American English, and Siri seems to do very well with that for me. But I know, you know, sometimes people, if you're in the deep south and you have a deep accent, or if you're in other countries, there can be issues and problems. And so if you know, Amazon stuff works better for you, that's the other part of this. Is, and I talked about this on my own podcast, is like, I'm kind of getting tired of the, like, you know, this one's better, that one's better. I think we need to move more to the place, like, use the thing that you really like. And if you really like Amazon and you want to go all in on Amazon stuff, then awesome. You know, if that all works for you, perfect. But because I have all Apple stuff and HomeKit and Siri works for me, like, why does that have to be bad on me? Or why do I have to be considered, well, you're just dumb because you're not using Alexa or Amazon and it's so much better? Like, that attitude is just getting really tiring to me.
Yeah, it's kind of a childish attitude. Although the one thing I want to bring up is, I think, a valid argument, which is that Siri has been around much longer than these other things.
Yeah, you would think it would be further along.
We would expect it to be further along. And the primary thing that these employees brought up is that they believe the most notable failure in Siri's evolution is the lack of third-party developer access. That's what they believe. And
if that was there.
I agree.
Absolutely.
There aren't things that I'm... What they have allowed developers access to right now, I don't believe has altered the way I use Siri at all.
But, okay, so this is the question that, again, I've been asking people and I'm not getting really hard answers on, or good answers on, is that, okay, let's plan the perfect world. And Apple creates a developer API for everything and every app that ever is possible. What would be the thing that's missing currently that you would want Siri to be able to do with a third party app?
Yeah. I really could not come up with something right now.
And that's kind of the point. I'm sure there's examples, and I'm sure we'll get some with some feedback. So if you have some, I would love to know them, because I'm kind of curious, because they did add things like payments. I don't use it. I don't do a lot of ride sharing, but I would imagine a lot of people really take advantage of the ride sharing booking thing.
Yeah, call me an Uber.
That's got to be pretty good. Trying to think if I have any apps where I've ever done photo stuff. No, I, you know, like, all the things that they have added, I don't use any of that with Siri. I just use the built-in stuff.
You could say that. You could say there are two reasons for that. Number one, those aren't the right regions, and we need something else. Number two is that the way they work is not good.
I'd be willing to buy all of those if someone would give me an example of what Apple should have implemented that they didn't.
Right.
And I personally can't think of any. I can't think of an app that I have on my phone that I need Siri access to the stuff that it has in it. Maybe RSS readers, if I could ask about new articles or something, then she could read those.
Perhaps,
exactly. One that might be really handy would be third party access to other podcast apps. I bet you a lot of people would really like and want.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I'll go with that.
So I'll buy that one. I mean, for sure. That would be really nice and make Siri a lot more useful. But it could just be confusing, too. It'd be something tricky to implement.
Yeah, because you'd have to say, you know, with Pocket Casts or what have you.
Oh, now I'm starting to really think of them. But again, like third-party navigation apps, I'm sure people would love to be able to trigger with Siri.
That's definitely a big... Or third-party music apps.
Yeah, yeah. So, but again, all of the things that Siri can technically already do, maybe just not with the app. And then then you might fall back and argue, well, if there's no interface, if there's no UI, what does it matter? You know, like if you say, hey, yes, lady, play this episode of a podcast and it plays, what else do you need? Like, do you need some other functionality?
What I would really like, even more so than better third-party or developer access, let me give compound statements to Siri.
Yeah, some of the follow-on stuff and the better knowledge. The other one that's a big one for me is just I don't think they've done a good job. And I think the founder of Siri was sort of, when he made his comments, was talking about this, the fact that there's not enough predictive stuff in there. Like, Siri should be infinitely more aware of contextual-based things, like what I'm asking for dependent upon where I am. Even if it's something like, she should be smarter about knowing that in the car I'm going to give these certain kinds of commands. Like, she should be less confused using the data that she would have available to her. And a lot of people argue, well, it's the privacy thing. I'm not talking about that. There's a lot of on-device information and data that Siri could take advantage of that it just doesn't feel like she does. Right? If you're at the airport or near an airport, you're probably going to be asking about travel related stuff. And she should be able to understand that and sort of default to those sorts of things.
Yeah.
Yeah. And again, I say this all the time because I want the developers to hear this and I want them to add this feature. Can you please, if I have calendar information where I've set a meeting location, can you just put in the command, hey, S-Lady, give me directions to my next meeting, and she'll understand that?
Oh, that would be fantastic.
I'm really surprised that doesn't exist.
I know. It just seems so obvious to me.
I feel like I've actually said that and been completely puzzled when she was like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, so I have to, I'm in my car, I have to open the calendar app and I have to click on the event and then I have to tap on the location and then I have to tap to open maps. And it's like that data is there, it's available on the phone, you don't have to go out to the cloud, you're not going to compromise my privacy. So those are the kinds of, and there's a lot of that data that I think Siri's not tapping into right now. And so I will agree with anybody who says that she could be smarter. And it seems like they've had the time to sort of work on that. And that hasn't really come to fruition.
Yeah. But I think the takeaway from those articles was that it's kind of a house divided. There's no clear vision, or in the past at least has not been a clear vision for what to focus on for Siri.
I kind of don't get that. I mean, it seems to be improving pretty good from my perspective, especially again, being a HomePod owner now. I think there's a lot of things in HomePod that maybe people aren't seeing.
You also have to keep in mind the carryover reputation that Siri got from its initial launch years ago. Right. Where Siri just wasn't good when it first came out. There were a lot of issues. There were server issues. There was recognition issues. There were command issues. I think people tried it once and got frustrated with it and then just decided to not deal with it. But I use Siri constantly throughout the day.
Part of the problem in the beginning was that Apple rolled this out for everyone and said, hey, it's beta. People don't know what beta means. So they had no idea they were using something that wasn't ready for prime time yet. And it didn't work right. And they thought it was bad. And they complained.
Yep.
Who could blame them, though? Because, I mean, that's not typically something that Apple would do. That was typically a Google maneuver. And it's funny you're mentioning that, because I was going to mention, it almost feels like the tables have turned from an Apple perspective with Siri. Because historically, what we see Apple do is not be out in front in terms of a new technology and sort of take the lead, right? They usually come in later after the technology is a little bit more mature, but not developed well by other companies. And then they come in with something that just blows away that part of the market, right? Like they did with the iPhone. There were smartphones, but none of them were very good until Apple creates the iPhone. And it's almost like you have the opposite here, where Amazon and Google held back on voice assistants, waited. Apple did a bunch of experimenting and things, and then they came in and have sort of, you know, turned the market on its head. And now Apple is perceived to be, you know, overtaken by those other competitors. And that's usually Apple's strategy. That's interesting to think about.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. Well, you know, I'd love to hear our listeners' feedback on the whole Siri thing. We've got feedback at theiosshow.com. You can send that to, or you can tweet us. But with that, let's talk about our iDevice picks and then wrap this baby up. So, Adam, I'll let you go first.
Oh, okay. I am going to pick a new smart bulb that I picked up that'll integrate with HomeKit and all your iOS devices, and actually will work with all of your other non-iOS smart home products. So Google Assistant, Amazon Alexa, Nest, this thing works with all of them, and it's called a LifeX bulb. You can get them at the Apple Store. I bought this one particular at Best Buy. They have a bunch of different models. This is their standard, like A18, what you would consider to be kind of like a standard light bulb. And the reason, part of the reason I picked it up is I wanted something that I could demo. I was doing a HomePod, HomeKit talk for my Mac user group, and I wanted something I could take there that was going to be simple and that I didn't have to have like a hub for.
Right.
And what's cool about these is they're totally hubless. So everything's built into the bulb itself. This is a RGB. It does, you know, like, I forget how many tens of thousands of colors, and you can, you know, it's dimmable and has all the features that you would want. The one downside to it, just to warn people, is it's dang expensive. This one bulb was $55.
Yikes.
Yeah, but what you're paying for is, the convenience. If you go out and start comparing other bulbs, one, it's HomeKit, two, it's hubless, three, it works with every platform. So that's where the price is coming into play. If you start looking at other competitive products that are cheaper, what you're going to find is they're going to be missing HomeKit. They're only going to work with one platform. They're going to have some other hub that you now have to plug in with all the other hubs for everything else you have. Because I don't know about you guys, but I have a hub for my Insteon. I have a hub for my Sonos. I have, you know, like, there's so many things that I just didn't want to deal with that. So that's what I like about this. They also have a bunch of different models, so you can get light strips, they have light bars, they have light panels, they have every kind of sort of lighting bulb or product. And because it's HomeKit, the setup was so awesome. It was literally take the bulb, you know, open up the Home app, point at the little code that was in the instruction sheet, and within a matter of seconds, without installing any additional software, they do have their own app for this, but I didn't even have to install the app. It was just boom, it's on my HomeKit. I could control all the colors. I could control the color temperature, so it does color temperature as well. If you like, you know, warm or cool light, whatever you want. It was great. So, you know, a lot of that convenience is the price is that convenience that, like, you're paying for.
Right.
So it's definitely got an Apple sort of Apple tax, if we want to call that, on this bulb, although it's more open. So.
Cool.
LifeX, LIFX is the brand name, and it's great. I don't know if I'll buy more at that price, but it certainly solved the problem I was looking to solve and did it really, really well.
Nice. All right, Jeff, what's your pick?
Well, looks like I'm keeping the HomeKit theme going, because my pick is an app for iOS, and it's called Home Pass, all one word. And it's an app that keeps track of all of your HomeKit device verification codes for you. So it gets access to your HomeKit data, so then it knows all the devices you have. And then you can say, okay, add this one, and then you can scan that code that's on the device. And now it keeps track of that data for you. So instead of having to, like, write all of them down or try and keep a folder where all of the little pieces of paper with those codes are, so you don't lose anything, you have an app, you keep everything in there. The one thing that I saw that was confusing people was that they were thinking that this would give them an inventory of every single HomeKit device they have. And so, like, if you have a bunch of Hue light bulbs, you don't see all the Hue light bulbs. You see the bridge, because that's the HomeKit device.
Right.
So as long as you go into this app understanding what the HomeKit device is, then it's great. And so I've got my various bridge devices all logged in here, and then the standalone devices that all have their own code, they're in here. And it's been great, because the problem I've had is, where's the folder that I threw all the little slips of paper in that had those stupid codes on them?
Right.
So I think it's $2.
If you've got the in-wall lights like mine from Insteon, and the codes are under the wall plate.
Oh, yeah.
Giant pain in the butt. You got to take the wall plate off to get to the code.
Yeah. So Home Pass, and I think it's $1.99.
It is. Or $2.99. It is $2.99.
Oh, $2.99. Okay, whatever. It's still worth the price.
Cool. Okay, so my pick is I'm going to go with Star Trek Discovery, the first season, on the CBS app, because, man, I really enjoyed that show. Did you guys get a chance?
Really good.
Did you subscribe to CBS, their subscription service, so you could watch that, or do you have the cable?
Cable, they don't do that. So you have to subscribe to the CBS app, and it is only on CBS app.
Oh.
Yeah, it's not actually on TV. It's only through the CBS app.
And so what is that, like $5 a month, $6 a month? What do they charge you for that?
Jeff, do you know?
It's $5.99 with commercials, $9.99 without. Jeez, so what I did was I paid for 1 month, binged the whole season, and then canceled my subscription. So I spent $9.99 to see the whole series.
Cool.
It's worth it.
Is it on iTunes now?
Yeah, I think it is.
No.
No?
Nope. It is
crud.
The only way to watch it is to get CBS All Access.
Oh, so, the Orville is on
The Orville, now. Yeah, you can get that. So, all right. So
I'll watch that instead.
It's,
screw those guys.
Orville is awesome. So here's my tip for people that want to watch Discovery but don't want to pay anything for it. You can sign up for a free trial, and I think it's like a week long.
Yeah.
And so as long as you're willing to commit the time to burn through, 13 episodes?
Something like that.
In a week, there you go. Watch it. and then cancel your subscription.
I can easily do that, except I probably already tried the free trial.
That's I think that's how I got on board. I was like, okay, yeah, I'll do the free trial. And if I haven't mentioned it before, doing free trials through iTunes is miraculous and awesome, because you sign up for the free trial and then immediately go into your store subscription page. Ooh. And say cancel. And it'll say, cool, it'll be canceled when it's over.
Yes.
Ooh, that's a power tip.
Yeah.
Never thought about doing that.
Yeah. So I always go through.
Well, and the good news is chances are that account, if I did sign up for the trial already, it's probably tied to my Gmail address and not my iTunes address.
Yeah. So there you go. But yeah, check out Star Trek Discovery. It's really good. There's also a really good podcast to go along with that. It's called The Greatest Discovery, from the guys who made The Greatest Generation, which is that was their first Star Trek podcast, which I have not listened to, but they're on the Maximum Fun Network. these guys they're in the biz, so they know a lot about just storytelling and cinematography in general, but they're also very funny. So they have a really fun conversation about the episodes as they come out. So I finished the entire series, and now I'm listening to their podcast about it. So I'll give it a double pick. So nice. Star Trek Discovery and The Greatest Discovery podcast.
Cool.
So with that, you can find all of our picks in the show notes at theiosshow.com. Review the show in iTunes, give it some stars, tell a friend. You can send your feedback to feedback@theiosshow.com. Our sponsor is Jamf now at jamf.com/TIOSS. Advertising is handled by Backbeat Media at backbeatmedia.com. Adam Christensen's at the Mattcast and mattcast.com and at Mattcast on Twitter. Thanks for being here, Adam.
Yep.
And Jeff Gamet's at the Mac Observer, macobserver.com, and the TMO Daily Observations podcast every weekday, and at Jake Gamet on Twitter. Thanks for being here, Jeff.
Sure. I love doing the show every single time.
And I'm at Michael Johnston on Twitter. With that, we'll talk to you next time on the iOS show.
An internet.
How are we going to communicate this?
The stylus.
We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right?